The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. here at CNBC Global Headquarters. I'm Frank Holland. Here is your 5 at 5. We start with Wall Street getting set for the final read on inflation before the Fed's next policy decision. Futures are moving higher ahead of that report. TikTok CEO hitting back after the House votes to force a sale of the social media app from China-based ByteDance. And $250 billion gone in just a single day. Shares of Tesla, they're running out of juice after a rare downgrade, calling it a growth stock without growth. Plus, Under Armour gets back to its roots and back to its founder, trying to ignite a rebound with shares more than 85% off of their all-time highs. And new reports pulling back the curtain on Reddit's financials ahead of next week's hotly anticipated IPO. It's Thursday, March the 14th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange. Thank you so much for being here with us. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. After a bit of a mixed session yesterday that saw the Dow finish higher for a third straight session, while the S&P and the NASDAQ, they fell for their third session in the last four. Taking a look at futures right now, you can see in the green across the board, it looks like the Dow would open up 150 points higher, the NASDAQ about a half a percent higher as well. Okay, despite the potential rebound for tech this morning, we just mentioned the NASDAQ, no love for Tesla, not at all. Shares hitting a 10-month low and down again in the pre-market after shedding more than 4.5% yesterday and nearly $250 billion in market value. One reason, a big downgrade from Wells Fargo from neutral to sell. The new price target, it's $125. That's down from $200. You can see right now the stock's trading at about $167. Analysts there calling Tesla a growth company with no growth. Also, another hit from UBS this morning, slashing its own price target from $225 down to $165 again, under the price where Tesla's trading right now. Also lowering its first quarter delivery forecast by more than 30,000 units. We will continue to watch this stock throughout the morning. Tesla shares, as we mentioned, down just about 1.5%, down for the week, almost 5%. Meantime, here's a quick check on some pre-market leaders in the NASDAQ. As we mentioned, the NASDAQ up about 0.5% this morning. Right at the top of the list, Moderna up 1.5%, followed by ON Semiconductor up 1.25%, and then third place PDD Holdings up just over 1%. We're also checking the bond market this morning ahead of today's producer price report and the final inflation read before next week's Fed policy meeting. Taking a look at yields, the benchmark creeping up this week. We've seen it creep up about 10 basis points throughout the week. Following that hotter than expected read on inflation, also in anticipation of today's PPI, we'll continue to watch yields throughout the morning. Okay, that is your morning money set up now. We want to turn our attention to a developing story and Capitol Hill. The CEO of TikTok going on the offensive, responding to yesterday's House vote on TikTok. That highly anticipated vote could be the first step in forcing parent company ByteDance to sell or otherwise give up its ownership of the social media platform. NBC's Bree Jackson joins me now with much more. Bree, 170 million users, a lot of eyes on this.
Yeah, that's right. Good morning, Frank. A lot of eyes are watching to see what happens here on Capitol Hill. The bill approved by the House would give the Chinese parent company ByteDance 6 months to divest from TikTok, or the app would essentially be banned from the U.S.
The future of TikTok is in limbo. Some lawmakers worry China could exploit the data of the app's more than 170 million American users.
This is not about the content, it's about the conduct. And I think it's a serious and direct threat to our national security.
Others on Capitol Hill raise concerns about a potential ban, arguing it would infringe on First Amendment rights and unfairly targets one social media platform.
We have not done anything in this Congress for years to protect Americans' privacy. How is it that Congress acts in a rush to ban TikTok and can't protect Americans on social media?
The bill now heads to the Senate, where its future is uncertain.
Some of my colleagues have already concluded that that's going on, and that's why they want to slap TikTok to Pluto. I'm not there yet. I want to hear what our intelligence community say.
TikTok influencers are making their voices heard. They say the measure would harm millions of small business owners who use the app to make money. The company's CEO vows to put up a fight.
We will not stop fighting and advocating for you. We will continue to do all we can, including exercising our legal rights, to protect this amazing platform that we have built with you. We believe we can overcome this together.
TikTok's fate now lies in the Senate's hands.
And Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer was noncommittal on whether the Senate would vote on the House bill. President Biden has said that he would sign the measure if it passes Congress. Frank?
You know, who knew a social media app known for funny dances would create this much controversy? So, Bree, so far, we've heard from creators, we heard from lawmakers, we even heard from the former president right here on CNBC. Has the Chinese government weighed in on TikTok yet?
Frank, the Chinese government did. The Chinese government says there is no evidence that TikTok poses a threat to national security here in the U.S. But ByteDance, as you know, the owner of TikTok, is subject to Chinese law and would have to hand over information if the communist government asked, and that would include user data.
All right, Bree Jackson, live in D.C. Bree, always great to see you. Thank you very much. All right, time now for a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good morning to you. Well, Under Armour shares getting a lift pre-market. The company saying founder and chairman Kevin Plank will be replacing CEO Stephanie Linnartz effective April 1st. Shares have been underperforming the broader market and industry peers since Plank stepped back as CEO about 4 years ago. Plank will remain a director on Under Armour's board, while Allianz chief economic advisor Mohamed El Arian will become chairman. Shares of Fisker are plummeting. The Wall Street Journal says the EV startup is considering filing for bankruptcy after warning it could run out of cash this year. The company is now worth less than $190 million. Fisker logging around $270 million in sales last year and more than $1 billion in debt. It says there's substantial doubt around its ability to stay in business as it looks to raise additional cash from investors and find a new manufacturing partner here in the U.S. And bullish signs from Reddit's IPO roadshow. The social media platform reportedly telling investors it expects to grow revenue by more than 20% this year and break even when it comes to adjusted earnings. That would mark a turnaround for Reddit, which became profitable for the first time last year. The company is looking to raise as much as $748 million during its roadshow and plans to sell 22 million shares at a price between $31 and $34 a piece, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. We'll see you just a bit later in the show. All right, turn our attention back to the markets in Wall Street. Investors are awaiting the latest producer price report out at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time and what will be the final read on inflation before next week's Fed policy decision. So interest rate traders, as tracked by the CME, they widely expect the central bank to hold off on cutting rates at least until June. Joining me now is Thomas Martin, Senior Portfolio Manager at Global Investments. Thomas, good morning. Good to see you.
Good morning, Frank. Thanks to be here.
All right. So again, consensus is March meeting, nothing's going to happen, but the tone, the commentary will be closely watched. So got your notes. Do you believe the cuts, the potential cuts have been moved to the second half of the year? Now, I don't want to get into semantics, but that would technically be July. So do you think the June cuts are almost off the table? Does this PPI report, could that seal the deal on no June cuts?
No, the June cuts are not off the table, but the probability is lower than it was previously. And even the number of cuts, which the markets come back to saying there's probably going to be about four, the Fed is still at three. And there are a few commentators on the Fed who think that maybe they ought to do two. So the movement is more towards the latter half of the year, maybe less cuts. The inflation reports are very important. And the CPI was sticky, but overall, the trend is still intact. So a lot of mixed messages here.
All right, a lot of mixed messages. I want to get your interpretation on something we're seeing in the market. So we are seeing a broadening. You highlighted some of the things that are seen to be doing better, financials, industrials. Industrials actually hitting a high just a few days ago, about a week ago. But is this broadening genuinely good for the market long term? as we've seen the broadening, we've also seen the market kind of have some fits and starts. Last week, we had a down week. This week, we had some ups and downs. Can the market continue to move higher towards some of these aggressive price targets, B of A at 5,400, with this broadening happening at the same time?
Well, I think you need to have the broadening. The market is at all-time highs, whether it's the S&P or the NASDAQ, and it's momentum stocks that have really been carrying it. Those are those ETFs that focus on basically stocks that have done well or are going to continue to do well is the thesis there, are up substantially more than the averages. And we had a hiccup in momentum with NVIDIA, which is probably the biggest momentum stock. And it's just that when stocks have moved as fast as they have, people look to take profits. Okay. So if you can find companies that are growing their earnings, but are a little bit under-recognized, that's what the market is trying to find if they can.
All right. Yeah. Just watching, looking at here right now, energy and materials over the last month, taking some leadership. Thomas Martin, good to see you. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks so much.
And don't forget, you can always go over to CNBC.com/pro if you're looking for more information on what's driving the markets and the trading day ahead. Again, go to CNBC Pro at CNBC.com/pro for exclusive insight and analysis. All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, with the rally comes retail traders and a comeback for shares of Robinhood. We got your big money movers. They're coming up next. Plus, while Washington may be heading down a slippery slope in its concern over Nippon Steel's offer for its American rival. And later, much more on Under Armour's Plank Playbook. And if bringing back a founder as CEO, if that actually translates into positive returns for shareholders. We have a very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your big money movers. We start in the cybersecurity sector. SentinelOne, under some pressure this morning, softer than expected guidance due to costs from three recent acquisitions offsetting strong fourth quarter results. The cyber company remaining optimistic, forecasting an inflection point for the business this year. Shares of SentinelOne, you can see they're down almost 9%. Robinhood, however, it's popping thanks to a 36% increase in trading volumes last month. The company's been benefiting from a resurgence in retail investing as day traders see increased earnings power and wealth transfer. Shares are up more than 100% over the last year. Right now in the pre-market, up just about 11%. And some whipsaw moves for shares of UiPath, climbing more than 13% on upbeat results before falling during the earnings call. That decline due in large part to the software company's guidance, forecasting a stronger second half of the year compared to the first half. It says typical seasonal patterns, along with plans to boost its operating leverage, could lead to some near-term weakness. Shares of UiPath right now, they're up just over 5%. All right, looking at shares of U.S. Steel as well, closing down nearly 13% yesterday. Look at that chart. Worst day in almost 4 years. The move coming after the Financial Times said President Biden plans to express concern over Nippon Steel's nearly $15 billion proposed takeover of the American industrial giant. Biden's concerns raising the odds the deal could face greater political opposition and maybe even overshadow a summit between Biden and Japan's prime minister at the White House next month, as well as future cross-border relations. Let's talk more about this now with Timna Tanners, metals and mining analyst at Wolfe Research. Timna, good morning. It's good to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
All right. So I really want you to walk us through this. So President Biden's expected to make a statement of concern about the deal as the Committee on Foreign Investment continues to review. So it's already under review. And all this, as we just mentioned, ahead of a visit by the Japanese prime minister. What does this statement mean for the deal? And then what does that possibly mean for shareholders?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, this deal has been unfortunately timed. The fact is that there's been plenty of examples of foreign ownership of steel over the past decades. It just this one happens to collide with a presidential election year, which means it's especially politicized. It doesn't help that this company has the name U.S. in its name. And already the union was pretty unhappy with U.S. Steel from the negotiations from a couple years ago that didn't go very well. So it's just kind of facing those crosshairs. And the union has pledged to, I think, make U.S. Steel's life pretty difficult here. So with this deal, with President Biden expressing concerns and President Trump having already expressed concerns, that's really a double whammy for them right now.
All right. Double whammy. So you're saying it's politicized right now. So I want to walk through some of the politics here. Nippon Steel and the union workers, they're still trying to iron out some differences. They met. They just couldn't seem to see eye to eye. That's just one hiccup. Of course, President Biden seen as the pro-union candidate in the upcoming November election that you just alluded to. How big of a factor is politics here? And then how big of a factor are the economics of, you know, a foreign country, an ally, but a foreign country owning such a critical infrastructure asset?
Well, I don't know that U.S. Steel is a critical infrastructure asset. I think it really comes down to the fact that U.S. Steel has a legacy in this country and U.S. Steel has the, you know, U.S. in its name.
Okay.
So I think that, you know, if you look at, there's been plenty of foreign ownership of steel over the years. There's plenty of foreign ownership of other entities. You know, the U.S. government in the IRA funding is giving lots and lots of government support to Taiwanese semiconductor companies. So I really think that this is a selective choice of the government to go after this deal because it's a political year. And because that, you, like you said, Biden is supporting, is seen as very supportive to the unions. The union has taken a very strong stance in this case. And so I don't really think that there's any major reason why a foreign ownership here is such a critical issue, to be honest.
Okay.
I just think that it's become a politicized deal. They're bringing up the fact that there's Nippon has ownership in China. There's plenty of U.S. companies that have involvement in China, right? But because of this sensitivity, I think they're bringing up all sorts of issues that are catching the attention of the politicians.
Is there a bigger issue here? Is there potentially a slippery slope when it comes to U.S. protectionism?
I think that's a really good point. I think that if you start to say, okay, well, you know, we don't like Nippon owning U.S. Steel, and that's a Japanese company, which is obviously a very important ally of this country, then what do you say about other foreign ownership of other U.S. entities? And is it just because they have the name U.S. in the title? Or is there some reason that, you know, going forward, there's going to be blockages of deals like this? I think it's a really important issue that could be a problem going forward. And to your point, with Japanese relations in the future.
All right, Timna Tanners, great to see you again. Thank you very much for your time and your insight. Appreciate it.
Sure.
All right, we're going to stick with the idea of the blurred line between politics and Wall Street. This morning, we're watching shares of Lithium Americas jumping on a Bloomberg report. The Biden administration will announce plans as soon as today to lend that company more than $2 billion. That would help pay for construction of a processing plant close to a mining project in Nevada. It's seen as a promising opportunity to produce the metal used in electric vehicle batteries and solar panels. Again, shares of this company up just over 7% right now. All right, while the White House reportedly gets set to block that multi-billion dollar deal between U.S. Steel and Japan's Nippon, it appears to be extending an olive branch in other parts of Asia, specifically in the Southeast Asian region, and urging more cross-border investment there. Our Eunice Yoon is in Bangkok, Thailand this time with much more. You were just in Manila yesterday, Eunice.
I was actually in Bangkok, moving from Manila, following the U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo. In the building behind me, Secretary Raimondo is currently meeting with the Thai Prime Minister, who has made investing in the chip industry, his own, a priority. She said today that Thailand is well positioned to benefit as U.S. companies look to, in her words, supercharge their investments in the longtime U.S. ally. And as America beefs up its own industry through the CHIPS Act. Now, she described the global semiconductor industry as dangerously concentrated in one or two countries. Now, the overall message from the secretary has been that diversifying supply chains for U.S. businesses is critical at this time. Earlier this week in the Philippines, she announced $1 billion in investments among several big-name U.S. companies. These investments would help to train Filipinos on American technology. So that's AI tools, financial payments, including EVs. And today, Secretary Raimondo convened virtual talks with countries of a regional economic pact that has been led by the U.S. She says that she's hoping that these participating countries will be able to focus on a work plan in 2024. Frank?
Can't keep up with you in Thailand now and Manila the other day. I'm trying to keep up. But I also want to keep up with the messaging from the U.S. government. So the secretary is there promoting more cross-border deals, as we were just talking about just a short time ago. Some issues with a cross-border deal involving Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel. Are there certain sectors where she's especially encouraging this cross-border investment?
Well, in terms of for Thailand specifically, she's looking at the chip industry because she can foresee that with the U.S. chip industry developing in manufacturing, that the U.S. chip industry is going to need countries that are able to assemble, and Thailand could potentially fit that part. And I think what's interesting, Frank, is that she barely mentioned China publicly, and that's kind of the elephant in the room. Of her whole visit here, that even though publicly she didn't want to acknowledge that China is one of the reasons for these types of visits, the fact of the matter is that the Biden administration is looking to find other ways and partners to be able to diversify away from China.
All right, Eunice Yoon in Bangkok, Thailand. Eunice, great reporting as always. Good to see you. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the curious case of the American consumer and the bull bear debate on the strength of U.S. pocketbooks. The name's caught in the crossfire when we return right here on Worldwide Exchange. Stay with us.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. We've got a quick market flash for you. Marlboro maker Altria planning to sell 35 million of its 197 million shares of Budweiser parent company AB InBev. That holding valued at just over $2.2 billion. AB InBev says it plans to repurchase 200 million of ordinary shares directly from Altria once the offer is completed. Taking a look at shares of both companies this morning, Altria shares up just about 0.25%. However, AB InBev shares, they're down almost 4%. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, a growth stock with no growth. Shares of Tesla taking a hit on strong words from one sell-side analyst turned bearish. No more shops piling onto the call. And as CNBC celebrates Women's Heritage Month, we are sharing the stories of some of our newly named CNBC changemakers, an annual list of 50 women who are innovating and transforming business. As we head to break, here's Upwards co-founder and CEO, Jessica Chang.
I think moms, well, especially moms, we are able to balance so much in life. And that ability to balance actually makes us really good leaders. I could be on a conference call, my kids could be barfing on the side, and I have to stay still and say, let's look at the projections and financials. And quite frankly, we just need more women.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I'm Frank Holland, and yes, it is 2024. Let's pick up a half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures hovering near session highs after a bit of a mixed day yesterday that saw the Dow finish higher for a third straight session, while the S&P and the NASDAQ, they fell for their third session in the last four. Take a look. You see futures in the green across the board. You can see right now the Dow looks like it would open up about 120 points higher, just off of its highs of earlier today, 0.33%. The NASDAQ, the best performer, up over 0.5%. Okay, despite the rebound for tech this morning, potentially no love for Tesla. Shares hitting a 10-month low and down again in the pre-market after shedding more than 4.5% yesterday. You see the decline all week long, actually. So yesterday, the company lost nearly $250 billion in market value. One reason, a big downgrade from Wells Fargo from neutral to sell. The new price target, $125. That's down from $200. Analysts calling Tesla a growth company with no growth. Another hit from UBS just this morning, slashing its own price target from $225 down to $165. You can see that's actually a dollar below are almost $2 below where the stock is trading right now. UBS also lowering its first quarter delivery forecast by more than 30,000 units. Meantime, here's a check on some of the pre-market leaders in the NASDAQ 100. Take a look. Moderna still at the top of the list, up over almost 1.5%, followed by ON Semiconductor and another chip maker, Marvell Technology. Intel right there in the number four spot. So three chip makers leading the NASDAQ 100 this morning. We're also checking the bond market ahead of today's producer price report and a final inflation read before next week's Fed policy meeting. Take a look at yields. The benchmark right here, just a tick lower than it was earlier today, but still moving higher throughout the week in anticipation of this PPI report and following a slightly hotter read on inflation earlier this week. Okay, that's your morning money setup. Let's get a check on some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning.
Hey, Frank, good morning. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says interest rates likely won't return to levels seen before the COVID pandemic. When asked about White House budget projections released this week showing higher interest rates in coming years compared to estimates from a year ago, Yellen argued the updated figures were in line with private sector forecast on rates. Meanwhile, Disney is reportedly looking at four division heads as potential successors to CEO Bob Iger. According to Bloomberg, TV chief Dana Walden, theme parks chief Josh D'Amaro, film business head Alan Bergman, and ESPN chairman Jimmy Pitaro are all being considered as part of the company's formal search. The report adds that no successor decision is expected this year. Iger's current contract runs through 2026, and Disney shares are relatively flat in pre-market. All right, regulators keeping the pressure on Boeing. The National Transportation Safety Board says they still don't know who worked on the panel that blew off a 737 MAX 9 during an Alaska Airlines flight because Boeing has no records about the job. The agency has asked Boeing for security footage, but was told the video was overwritten months before the blowout. In response, Boeing vowing to support the investigation, which the NTSB says will be more difficult moving forward, Frank.
All right, Silvana, thank you very much. Yeah. All right, turning back to the markets, got a busy day shaping up for retail on top of what's already been a market-moving week around inflation and the consumer. This morning's retail sales expected to show an 8% increase in February. That's compared to an 8% decline in January. We also get earnings from Dollar General, Dick's Sporting Goods, and Ulta Beauty. They come a day after Dollar Tree missed holiday quarter estimates and announced it's shutting down nearly 1,000 stores. Retailers targeting the lower-end consumer, they've really been struggling in recent months due to a shift in consumer spending. But are Dollar Tree's issues company-specific, or could they signal a broader trend? Let's bring in two of our favorite retail experts for a bull and bear case on the consumer. SW Retail Advisors President Stacy Widlitz is here on the bull case. Oppenheimer Senior Equity Research Analyst Brian Nagel has the bear argument. Good morning to both of you. Stacy, I'm going to start things off with you. You are a bull here. So you just kind of showed the numbers right now. Decline in January, a rise expected in February. If those numbers do come in line, is that a positive sign not only for the current state of the consumer, but going forward?
Good morning, Frank. Frank, we've been calling for consumer recession for years, right? And it just hasn't happened, despite the fact that savings rates are way down. And yes, the lower income consumer has been under some pressure. Yesterday, we heard from Family Dollar. Obviously, Dollar Tree comps were up 7. Family Dollar, an acquisition they made years ago, has some legacy problems there. McDonald's talked about inflation eating into the lower income consumer. We know that they're eating at home more. But generally, if you look at the numbers that have come out from Walmart to TJX to Gap to Abercrombie, I mean, the numbers have been phenomenal. And I would say out of the 60 plus companies that we cover in the U.S. and Europe, promotions remain overwhelmingly down year over year. So these are full price sales. They are not promotionally driven here. So most of the signs that I'm seeing still point to positive. You even heard from Williams-Sonoma yesterday, Pottery Barn, which is big ticket stuff. Comps were much better than expected. So I expect those numbers to be in line here and be a sigh of relief.
Okay, sigh of relief in your mind. Brian, I'm going to come over to you. When we talk about inflation, you hear the Fed and other people say you can't go by 1 month of data. But when it comes to this retail report, is this 1 month of data, is that enough of a sign to give you an indication of not only right now, but going forward?
Well, good morning, Frank. No, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's one simple data point. I mean, I would just, you know, to kind of tag up with what Stacey's saying, consumer, I very much agree that if we look at the consumer today and we take into consideration what's reported for retail sales later this morning, look, the consumer is in a much better spot than the fears of some type of significant recession 6, 9, 12 months ago. No question. You know, but as I look at consumer spending here, whether the aggregate data or probably more importantly, what my companies are reporting, it's okay, but not great. You know, Stacey brought up Williams-Sonoma. Yes, much better than expected. And I think Williams-Sonoma is doing a phenomenal job managing a difficult backdrop. But let's keep in perspective. Comp store sales in the fourth quarter, so that's January quarter for Williams-Sonoma, were down almost 7%. Okay, so we're seeing those type of numbers. You know, if I look at the home improvement retailers, you know, flat at best, down modestly. We had Best Buy report just recently, again, down. So the consumer spending is holding in. I think, but trends are okay, not great. And what worries me here, you know, to bring this to stocks, and this is I've been telling our clients.
We definitely want to bring it to stocks, Brian. So go ahead.
Bring it to stocks right now. I mean, I've been in downgrade mode. I've downgraded a number of notable names over the last, say, several months. My concern is you see these valuations pushing towards what I consider to be historic highs. You know, that's Home Depot, Lowe's, Five Below, Nike. You know, so that valuations are pushing higher when the consumer spending is holding in, but not great.
All right, so you're definitely filling that that bear roll for us. So you keep talking about the consumer, but we always say there's two different consumers, the high-end consumer and the low-end consumer. I'm going to stick with you for a second, Brian. In some recent notes, you cited the strength at Lululemon, but then we're seeing weakness at a Nike and also a Foot Locker that really plays to consumers at all across the spectrum. What does that tell us right now about the low-end consumer? How important is the low-end consumer also following that Dollar Tree news?
Well, look, let's talk with Nike and Lululemon quickly. I don't know if that's much of a call on, you know, low-end versus high-end, maybe a bit. But I think, you know, the bigger call there is you have a very strong brand in Lululemon. Nike, look, great brand. I just don't think you have the momentum behind that brand right now that Lululemon is enjoying. Okay. Foot Locker, I don't follow closely. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I could have let you finish your point, but Stacey, I'm going to come over to you. Are you worried about the lower-end consumer going forward? I know you think the sales are going to come in line, but still, is there concern about the lower-end consumer going forward?
Yeah, I mean, there's clear signs out there that, you know, let's face it, inflation, food inflation is up 20% on a two-year basis. So that low-end consumer remains stretched, and they have been feeling pressure for a while. But, you know, I think that is... inflation is obviously calming down. We're not getting deflation. I mean, that would be a huge help for that low-end consumer. We're not seeing any signs of that, and I don't expect that. But I think, you know, again, you're seeing the mid-tier. It's the winners and the losers here. You're still seeing the department store space, whether it's Nordstrom losing share, Kohl's still struggling. So it depends on what story you're seeing. But again, you're seeing some of the apparel brands, just phenomenal double-digit comps here, all full price. So, you know, I think it's winners and the losers here. Right. But I agree with Brian there, you know, valuations are absolutely stretched. You look at Abercrombie, we put a sell on the stock before they reported earnings. The stock is down nicely. Valuations, you know, imply that these comps are going to keep chugging along, having double digits.
Valuation seems to be a story for just about every stock nowadays. So very quickly, before we let you both go, I want to get to a news story. Kevin Plank returning to Under Armour. Very quickly, Stacey, you first. Is this meaningful? Is this going to be meaningful for the stock or the broader industry?
I mean, I think Under Armour, like so many athletic brands that are overexposed to wholesale, needs repositioning here. They got overly promotional, and the brand needs to be elevated again. You know, their wholesale business was down double digits, so absolutely a refresh there, back to full price selling. So shake up here is needed for the brand.
Brian, very quickly, we got to get going. Good or bad, is it meaningful at all to see Kevin Plank come back?
Definitely meaningful. My bet is good. Kevin's going to bring some energy back to this brand. It's his brand.
All right, got to leave it there. Great to see both of you. Thank you very much for your time. All right, still ahead here on Worldwide Exchange. Architects, you need to listen up. Diane Olick has a firsthand look at a home being designed by what else? Artificial intelligence. Worldwide Exchange coming right back. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Bernstein initiating coverage of Robinhood with an outperform rating and a $30 price target. The move coming as the crypto platform reveals it saw a 36% increase in trading volumes last month. Bernstein saying Robinhood stands to benefit from a monster of a crypto cycle this year and next year. Goldman Sachs upgrading Citi's rating to a buy. It sees a path for higher returns for its fellow big bank and says there's a compelling valuation support story there. And a pair of ratings upgrades on Williams-Sonoma, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, both moving it to a hold, both citing the company's ability to hold its margin, with Morgan Stanley touting its ability to do so even in a weaker demand environment. All right, from home furnishings to home construction, as with everything else, artificial intelligence is now moving into the housing space, specifically architecture and construction. The company that brought us the first 3D printed home community is now unveiling new AI technology that could eventually replace architects. Our Diana Olick joins us with the details. Diana, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Icon is a pioneer in 3D printed homes. Now they're unveiling Vitruvius, an AI program that's yet another step in housing automation. It enables consumers not just to design their own homes online, but to take their vision much further.
The big vision of Vitruvius is to go all the way from human desire all the way through delivery. So like construction documents, budget schedules, even robotic instructions.
Now, Vitruvius asks you questions and learns from your answers, as well as from every design it's ever seen. Then it gives you three potential homes. So I tried it out with Ballard's help.
Like a log cabin style vacation ski home.
How many bedrooms and bathrooms?
I'd like 5 bedrooms and at least 3.5 bathrooms. I'd like an open floor plan for family events.
Would you like the home to feature any specific amenities such as a fireplace, a mudroom for ski equipment, or a hot tub?
I want all of that.
Ready? Uh-huh. Let's go. And now it's beginning to generate.
Oh, I like the second one.
It's got the fireplace in your bedroom, as you have asked. This is a 1-story right now.
Okay, I think I'd like 2-story.
And you'll notice it put the bedroom on the second floor because you said you wanted the living area downstairs. And so it's really understood quite a bit.
Can I change it right now to see what an affordable home would look
like? Let's see. This looks expensive. Can you make the home more affordable? And so you can see it's made it a little smaller.
The kitchen's smaller, I see.
Everything is smaller. Everything's a little more basic.
Now, Vitruvius can also show you what the home would look like if it were 3D printed, and it would put the specs in for the printer. And it can also design the home in the style of a famous architect, living or dead. And that, of course, opens up questions about copyright, as with everything else in AI, Frank.
Yeah, a lot of questions there. But one thing I know for sure, I like your taste in homes, like the mudroom, everything you had going on there, Diana. So back to your story. This is interesting. So this can copy an architect's style, but will it eventually put architects out of business?
Well, you know, potentially, yes. Ballard says architects can use it themselves as a tool at first, but he admits it is going to change their business a lot. And we actually spoke to an architect who tried it out at South by Southwest this week where it was unveiled.
I think it's going to be more of a tool. There are jobs that are going to change. Obviously, architecture is never going to be the same anymore.
Yeah, and it's really changing the way we look at how the costs of going into architecture plans. As anybody who's done a renovation or built a house knows, the plans can be incredibly expensive. So this can make it a whole lot cheaper going forward. And it also can make homes greener in the sense that it will learn from how to make homes more energy efficient. Frank?
All right, Diana Olick. Great reporting as always. Diana, good to see you. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, healthcare, financials, and ag machines. Oh, my. The three stocks across those spaces our next guest has high on her shopping list. We'll be right back here on Worldwide Exchange. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Time now for your WEX wrap-up. We start with the CEO of TikTok responding to yesterday's House vote, which took the first step in forcing parent company ByteDance to divest the social media platform. CEO Shou Chu says the bill, if it's passed into law, would effectively ban the app on smartphones all across the U.S.
We will not stop fighting and advocating for you. We will continue to do all we can, including exercising our legal rights, to protect this amazing platform that we have built with you.
In other D.C.-related news, former President Donald Trump reportedly considering billionaire hedge fund manager John Paulson as his Treasury Secretary if he wins the presidential election. Shares of Lennar are falling despite a profit beat and strong guidance around new orders. Quarterly home deliveries rising by 23% as the spring buying season kicks off. Fisker set to wipe out nearly half of its market value at the open as it reportedly considers filing for bankruptcy. The EV startup recently warned it could run out of cash this year. Reddit reportedly telling investors at its IPO roadshow it expects to grow revenue by more than 20% this year. The social media platform first became profitable during the fourth quarter of last year. And shares of U.S. Steel, they're rebounding this morning after closing down nearly 13% yesterday for their worst day in almost 4 years. The move coming as President Biden reportedly plans to express concern over Nippon Steel's nearly $15 billion proposed takeover of U.S. Steel. And here's what to watch today. We get initial jobless claims, producer price index, and retail sales figures before the open. Also watching results from Dick's Sporting Goods, Dollar General, Adobe, and Ulta Beauty. Investors are keeping a close watch on that latest inflation data coming off another hotter-than-expected CPI report this week. Ahead of that, looking at futures, you see futures are in the green across the board. Looks like the Dow would open up about 150 points higher. For much more on the trading day ahead, let's bring in Victoria Fernandez, Crossmark Global Investments Chief Market Strategist. Victoria, always great to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I just want to get your take on some of the action we've seen in the market. We've been highlighting it all morning long, the Dow on a three-day winning streak, the S&P and the NASDAQ falling in three out of the last 4 days. Now futures solidly in the green. What do you think about all this action?
Yeah, we've definitely seen some volatility in the market over the last couple of weeks, and I don't think that's surprising. We did have an upside surprise to CPI. People are wondering what's going to happen with PPI later this morning. Obviously, we have the Fed meeting next week. And I think there's some questions. You know, the market has built in the expectation that we will have a soft landing, that we're going to have double-digit earnings growth, the Fed's going to cut multiple times this year. So they really need the data to support that. And it's been somewhat mixed. I think we need to be watching probably the labor market reports very closely as well to see if there's any kinks in the armor there that could tell us things are slowing down. But the market is looking for something in order to continue this bull market. I think lower yields is key for it.
Okay.
And so upside surprises to inflation doesn't really fit that story.
All right. So as this market's looking for a reason to keep this bull market going, give me a sense. How do you see today shaping up? What's your WEX word of the day?
So my WEX word of the day is momentum. And Frank, I think it's because this has really been a momentum-driven bull market. And you like to see momentum. It's actually been one of the best performing factors over the last few weeks, actually for this year, year to date. But when you have momentum where it is now, like in the 92nd percentile, and you combine that with sentiment readings that are extremely high, you look at the AAII bull bear spread, you look at some of the other sentiment readings, and they're very extreme to the upside. The combination of those two things historically, 80% of the time over the next 3 to 6 months, you get a pretty significant pushback against momentum. So we think that leads us right into about the middle of the year, maybe late spring, where we're going to see the economy really slow down. That should coincide with where the Fed is thinking they're going to start lowering rates. So momentum is something I think we need to watch very closely.
So it sounds like you're in the June camp. Do you think we're going to get that cut in June?
I think we probably will. You're looking at interest rate probabilities right now around 63-65% for June. Those will probably go up if the inflation numbers between now and then moderate and get us closer to a 3% or maybe a little under on the inflation reading. So we'll see. There's a lot of time between now and then.
So, Victoria, you came to us with a cornucopia of picks, different sectors, different things going on. Gap, Kroger, Apple, that's on your trim side. But on the buy side, Cigna, Deere, and J.P. Morgan. I don't even know where to lead into this. Why these stocks? Why right now?
Well, we'll start on the trim side real quick. You look at names like Gap and Kroger that are up 10, 11% over the last week, take a little bit off the table, and you can put them in places where there's more opportunity. Cigna is one of our favorite names. We've liked healthcare for a while. Your viewers that watch know that at Crossmark, we really dig in and we want strong balance sheets. That's what you're getting here. Strong free cash flow, operating income up 30%, revenues up 12%. You're getting a dividend and your debt to capital ratio is low. It's down, or Cigna is actually up this year. So maybe wait for a little bit of a pullback where it comes down and it's a good entry point there. Same story with Deere. You're getting stronger balance sheets there, a beat on their earnings of about 20%. And we know the infrastructure bill is coming into play this year and next. So there's some opportunities there.
All right. So you're seeing some opportunities there. In general, you're saying momentum's a big factor in the market. It's always great to have you here. Thank you so much for those picks. Again, your picks, Cigna, Deere, and J.P. Morgan. As I said, a cornucopia, wide range of them there. On
Take
the sell
pick.
Side,
yeah.
You got Gap, Kroger, and Apple. Always great to see you. Thank you very much. Okay, that's going to do it for us. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.